This is WKSU News. I'm Andrew Meyer. Akron's Inner Belt never lived up to its potential. It actually never even came close. The highway was supposed to give Akron suburbs easy access to downtown, but the road was never completed as intended. The bigger problem is that entire neighborhoods were bulldozed to make way for the highway. Some of that history and the voices of a few of those who were affected are the focus of a story in the new issue of The Devil Strip, which is now on newsstands. The story is A Road to Nowhere, How the Construction of the Inner Belt Displaced Thousands. I'm in The Devil Strip's offices in Akron and sitting with the reporter behind the story, Noor Hindi. Noor, it's good to see you.
Hi, Andrew.
There's been a fair amount that's been reported and written on the Inner Belt, a road that was only operational, really, for a dozen years before then-Mayor Pasqualic in 1999 started looking at decommissioning it. However, there hasn't been as much focus on the neighborhoods it destroyed, and you really get into this in this article.
Yeah, so we at the Devil Strip, one of the things that we like to focus on is getting that first-person narrative and talking really on the grounds with people. It was really important for me to try to find people who were displaced and get some of their voices in there, because I think that's the heart of the story and the trauma that we were wanting to report on.
There are still people around who remember the old neighborhoods and lived in the old neighborhoods. How hard was it to find them?
It was really difficult. I actually spent about a month. At some point, like a month into researching, I thought that there wasn't a story to report on because it was really difficult finding people. But what ended up happening is that Chris Miller of The Akronist forwarded me information for Tom Fuller, who's the who does Alpha Homes, and he was able to connect me to some of those people. And reached out a lot of, at some point I had a list of maybe 50, 60 people that I was calling and seeing, hey, do you know anything about this? And it was really through a friend of a friend of a friend that I was able to locate people.
How wary were people about opening up to you about what is history going back 50 years, 60 years ago?
They weren't. I didn't really have much trouble getting people comfortable enough to talk. It seemed like something that they really wanted to talk about. And a lot of them were actually surprised that anybody wanted to interview them about this and talk to them. So that was really refreshing.
The neighborhoods that were destroyed by the Inner Belt's construction were predominantly African American, and they were also overall impoverished. They were lower income.
Yeah they were. A lot of the people, so for James Williams, for example, he had grown up in a home with, you know, the windows had cardboards on them. He had a lot of siblings. But the neighborhood was intact is the idea that I got from a lot of people. Despite the homes being impoverished, the neighborhoods were self-sustaining.
And that's often overlooked, I think, when you look at the issue of urban renewal. The idea of wiping out complete sections of a city to make it better, which was very popular in the 50s, 60s, into the 70s. The idea is we can just start over. We're not going to even bother with what's there. Even if it is not doing as well as it could be, it's still vibrant. But forget that. We can do it better.
Right. And that was one of the misconceptions. And Jason Segedy will be very honest. He's the city planner, will be very honest about telling you that urban renewal, as it should, gets a bad reputation. Because rather than working with the communities and seeing what can be improved upon, they just tore it. They just tore everything out. But it was, they thought that they were killing two birds with one stone.
It was a two for one deal, really. And you point that out in the article.
Exactly. It was very, it was a solution for them, and they thought that it was the best possible, you know, idea that they could have to kill two birds with one stone and solve both of these problems, which is they wanted people to have easy access to downtown Akron and fix, and I put that in quotes, this community.
And in the process of fixing this community, there were more than 100 active businesses that disappeared as a result.
Yeah, and those businesses... those businesses and the people who visited those businesses relied a lot on their social capital. So you have people who were able to walk down to their neighbor's house. If they needed eggs, if they needed flour, whatever it is that they needed, they could ask, they could trade resources. The idea that I got from a lot of the people I interviewed was you could go to some of these businesses if you didn't have money. They would you know, loan you items for your kids, loan you food for your kids, and you could pay them back later. It was really based a lot on trust, which isn't something we see now, but that was really prevalent.
I think another thing that's interesting that's pointed out in the article is the fact that when this neighborhood was wiped out, you had people who had been living 10 homes away, and it's very easy to walk from one home to another. But as anyone who's driven the Innerbelt in that area knows, it's virtually a wall between what's on one side and the other at this point.
Yes, it literally segregated neighbors to neighbors. Like, it literally segregated the community. And part of that, if you talk to Malcolm Costa, who is the director of Summit Community Actions, I believe, he will tell you that part of that was purposeful to control that neighborhood, to make access to that neighborhood easier, to block certain streets off so that could keep track a little bit easier, that nobody could escape in case of a crime that happened. And part of that came right after the 1968 riots. So that was either a unintended or intended consequence, but either way, yeah, there are barriers.
We're at a moment in the life and death of the Innerbelt. The highway is being decommissioned, but not quickly deconstructed. Regardless of how soon what's next follows, that neighborhood that was removed will never come back.
No, it won't come back. We can only hope that the city of Akron, as it plans for it, will continue to create green space and community meeting spaces for people to connect with each other.
What's your sense? You've had a chance to talk to some of the people who lived in the neighborhood at that time. What's their feelings about the way the city is approaching the Innerbelt now, the fact that they're decommissioning it?
A lot of them feel that a lot of them knew from the beginning that it was a bad idea, and they fully acknowledge that. And now I think that they're sort of, I think upset about it, but also I got the sense that, like, we don't really care because the worst has already happened. So what now?
The worst has happened and there's nothing you can do to change it? Is it that
cynical? A cynicism is a good way to sort of describe it, is they're very cynical about city government. One of the people that I'd interviewed had actually mentioned to me, you know, this is why I don't vote, because these people in power don't look out for us and they don't care about us and they don't listen to us. And so why should I go out and vote?
We've been talking with Nora Hindy, senior reporter for the Devil Strip, about her feature story in the new issue of the magazine, A Road to Nowhere, How the Construction of the Innerbelt Displaced Thousands. You can find it in print and at thedevilstrip.com. Nora, thanks for chatting.
Thank you.
I'm Andrew Meyer, 89.7 WKSU.